Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
I'm bringing Hassel back.
Caroline, Willie, D-Mays, 102.5, 106.3, The Game and The Game Nashville app. We're live from the Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical Game Studio. Streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook Live every single day. Our video streaming is brought to you by Superbook Sports. And joining us now on a draft week is Tim Hasselbeck, ESPN NFL analyst. Tim, I know that you are just as ready to get the draft underway as we are, but kind of breaking down the most recent rumors or most recent topic of conversation surrounding the quarterbacks in this year's draft, and that's C.J. Stroud's S2 cognition score. Now, traditionally, when it comes to maybe like a Wonderlic, I don't really think too much into it, but looking at the S2 cognition test and how it tries to test and evaluate a little bit more than just your intelligence, and the fact that C.J. Stroud's score reportedly was so drastically different than the rest of the quarterbacks in this year's class. Are you buying the C.J. Stroud, you know, falling in the ranks, and how much do you weigh into the S2 cognition score?
Yeah, in terms of C.J. Stroud falling, I really believe, and I've had a number of conversations with people on this, that where somebody is on somebody's draft board, barring, an off-the-field incident that all of a sudden makes you question whether or not, Laramie Tunsil? Like a scenario like that.
Yeah.
So what I'm saying, I think draft boards are set. And I think they're set a long time ago. And I think people know exactly where they have players. And I think that in order for them to move up and down, a pro day workout isn't going to have that significant of a move. A test, like Caroline, to your point, like whether it was back when it's a Wonderlic or whether it's an S2, and honestly, there are other tests that are being administered to people that I don't think that it necessarily is something that's a drastic mover. Now, I do think that it becomes part of the evaluation process, but I mean this wholeheartedly, and this is, this isn't just like a feeling of mine. This is from talking to people. I think that like a low score on an S2 is just part of the puzzle, and if you had a let's just say you had a first round grade on somebody and you said that he was going to be a top 15 pick or something like that. Like that's a talent, everything in your evaluation. And then you stumble onto some S2 score that's really, really low. I don't think that is enough to move somebody out. It's no different than if you had a really high grade on somebody, you went to their pro day and, they didn't throw it as well as you thought they would throw it. I don't think that moves you out. So I think that as we've made the draft into such a big event and made all of these evaluation processes such a big event, I think that in some ways we've kind of overstated the value of each and every little piece that's a part of the evaluation process.
Tim Hasselbeck is with us talking about, quarterback shifting. In the matter of 5 hours, Will Levis's odds to go number one overall have gone from plus 2,000 to plus 800. Bryce Young's odds in that amount of time have gone from minus 2,000 to minus 1,000. Now, is there any merit to all of a sudden all of these Vegas odds shifting for both Will Levis and Bryce Young and some of the hype for Will Levis to go either number one or number two overall?
Yeah, with that, how much is that is the money moving the line, right? Versus maybe information moving the line. I think I've said this before, and I think you guys know how I feel about Adam Schefter. I think Adam, he's a friend of mine, but I have been with him, numerous times, whether it was out to dinner, whether it's at his house, I know how hard Adam Schefter works. I know Adam's access. You know, Adam not long ago said, hey, look, Bryce Young's the pick. He's going to be the pick. And so with that, look, I think that, again, I think it was decided, and I think that'll be the case. So I guess what I make of it, like, I don't know. I would guess it's just that's money moving the line. I don't know that it'd necessarily be information moving the line. Because, look, Will Levis, I think there, at least in my personal evaluation, I think there's a lot that separates Bryce Young from Will Levis.
We're talking with Tim Hasselbeck, ESPN NFL analyst, talking draft, and we can't wait for it to begin and sort of end. At least Willie can't.
Wait a second. What are you talking about?
At least Willie can't.
I heard you and Willie were talking about, like, you could use another month or so just to really get ready. Evaluate a couple other mocks, I
think Willie would actually go high if the draft had another month.
I will take a vacation. Exactly. If they postpone the draft for another week or two, I'm taking that week off.
Tim, Rand Carthon had his pre-draft presser yesterday, and it was a really good presser for about 45-50 minutes. Opened up a little, but not much. He's trying to be coy. He's trying to keep everything close to the vest, and understandably so. But he did say that, you know, they've had Will Levis in. They've had Anthony Richardson in and some other guys. But he didn't get a chance to talk with C.J. Stroud. Mike Vrabel and Tim Kelly did that. Obviously, Bryce Young canceled all his visits. And some are thinking, well, since he hadn't talked with C.J. Stroud, then C.J. Stroud is out for the Tennessee Titans. I look at it from this standpoint. They don't think they would be in a position to draft C.J. Stroud or Bryce Young. So why waste time with individuals, you as a GM, with individuals that you know you will not be in a position to draft? Now, the other guys, Will Levis, Anthony Richardson, Hendon Hooker, yes, you're going to be possibly in a position to draft them, so you want to sit down and talk with those guys. Am I not reading enough into that?
Yeah. Well, here's my question, okay? Mm-hmm. Let's say Bryce Young goes one. Let's say the Texans don't draft a quarterback. Arizona's not drafting a quarterback. We get to the Colts at four, and they like Will Levis. Look, like moving from 11 to 5, like, I mean – then you might be in the mix with C.J. Stroud, no? Like, I don't think that's how it will go, but, and heck, look, you could say, who's that, Seattle there? Seattle says, look, we love Anthony Richardson. Like, now all of a sudden it's like, well, wait, maybe we just got to get in front of the Raiders and so we can go get our guy. So I'm not sure, D-Mace. Mm-hmm. I mean, look, I do not think it'll play out that way, but kind of what we were joking out before, we've got all kinds of time to evaluate these dudes, right? You watch their tape, you get the combine, you get pro days, you get, you know, a certain number of meetings with prospects. I get it that the top guys, you know, don't want to fly all around the country, you know, doing pre-draft stuff. But, like, look, if you think there's a possibility – and go see him, you know, and look, maybe with Vrabel and Tim Kelly, that's enough. But and look, I would argue that it probably is. But at the same time, if you're going to draft a franchise quarterback, look, I want everyone to meet him. There's a reason David Tepper was at some of these workouts for Carolina. So that's like, to me, I would say that was somewhat surprising to hear, because I think you have time to do it. Mm-hmm. And I think it's probably worth investigating it if you're going to be in the quarterback market.
Now, another question, C.J. Stroud, a lot of people are pointing at his, not, I'm not even talking about the scores, the test, but a lot of people are starting to point at, well, look at the receivers he had. And you're absolutely right. I mean, whether it's Harrison Jr., who will be a first-rounder next year, barring injury, whether it's Olave or Wilson, he's had, or Jackson Smith and Jigba, he's had some, you know, quality, top flight.
Not to mention the offensive line.
Exactly. He's had some top flight guys. But even having top flight guys doesn't make you the quarterback that he was for Ohio State. No one had this question about Joe Burrow. Maybe because it's different systems. I can understand that. But Joe Burrow, Chase, Marshall,
he had
Jefferson.
Some dudes. He had some
he
dudes.
Had Moss. And he had a good offensive line.
Caroline
and a running
back.
And
smiling and too.
And
the LSU graduate. Yeah, that was a pretty good team.
Go ahead and talk about it.
And the running back, not to say. But these questions were not brought up about Joe Burrow, but they're being brought up about C.J. Stroud. And I think the reason why is because of the offense that both teams ran.
Look, I think it's what you're bringing up. I think it's one of the most difficult things when you're evaluating quarterbacks. So, like, to answer your question of why I don't think it was as big of a deal for Burrow, is because go watch his LSU tape. Mm-hmm. Caroline be all over this, but and he is creating offense. Like, that guy was as slippery inside the pocket. Like, is he a pocket passer? Sure. But, man, he created a ton of offense. And so while the guys around him were good, like, you look at the how amazing that year was, how amazing, like, the big plays were, how amazing he was as a creator, you know, when things broke down. I think that cleared it up. I'll give you another example, though, of exactly what you're talking about. Mac Jones. Mm-hmm. That was part of the thing that I really struggled with Mac Jones. I'm watching him play Notre Dame. I think it was College Football Championship, if I'm remembering correctly. He throws a bubble against Notre Dame that goes 65 yards for a touchdown. I'm like, hold on, wait a second. Like, that's like cheating. Like, that's not playing quarterback. So I had a really hard time with Mac Jones on some of that stuff. And look, that can go both directions. Mm-hmm. I remember watching Josh Allen and thinking, man, like, when a guy's really covered, he just tries to throw it harder at him and stick him with the football. Like, I don't know that I love that. You know, Daniel Jones, like, I watched a Duke game against Virginia, and I just was like, this is terrible. I feel like, you know, I can go see a more competitive game, you know, with Dilfer coaching Lipscomb. To me, I think that is one of the hardest things when you're evaluating quarterbacks is how good are the guys that he's playing with and how do those guys relate to the guys they're playing against. So, look, I think it's something that you have to consider, and I think it's part of the reason Stroud had so much production.
More with Tim Hasselbeck coming up next about the 2019 LSU team. I'm kidding. All that coming up next. Caroline Willie D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Caroline Willie D-Mace, ESPN NFL analyst Tim Hasselbeck is on with us now.
A little hot chocolate coming back here. By the way, the other hot chocolate song is being used for ESPN as their NHL playoff promo song. So if you like the library of hot chocolate, it usually goes like two songs deep. That's about it. So it's a two and done. History of hot chocolate right there
it's
for you.
It's better than a one-hit wonder. Yeah. A two-hit wonder.
It gets you out of that category.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's a two-hit wonder.
Yeah.
All right, Tim. I don't know if you're a hot chocolate fan or not, but just throwing a little 70s trivia out there for
I
you.
I like hot chocolate. But...
the drink. Plus your water. Plus your two-gallon jug of water.
Like, hey, anything to get D-Mace to talk about candy, M&M, chocolate, like, we can take anything there. Like,
no question. No question about it. So, Tim, I got a question for you on yesterday when Rand Carthon was asked about the S2 test. Mm-hmm. You know, he was saying, this is our first year using it. I'm still trying to learn about it. What do you know about it? Had you heard about it before?
Yeah. So I'd heard about it, and so I don't know a ton about it, but I do, and obviously, you know, haven't taken it, haven't really looked into, like, the guys that have done well on it. I mean, it's just the stuff that most everyone has kind of read about it. Now, I know people that kind of are operating in this space. And so whether it's, you know, character evaluation, whether it's, you know, creating a risk profile for somebody in terms of, you know, how they will respond to certain things, most of those things off of the playing field, more, you know, in terms of, like, how will this person respond to adversity in the event that an injury occurs, or they're facing a contract dispute, or like things like that. So I'm familiar generally with the space. And I would say that in these tests, all of them, you know, it's not like a standard, hey, you know, here's 100 questions, 1 point each. They're all kind of weighted evenly. And it's just like a general score. They are definitely siloed, if you will, you know, in the test. So, you know, there'll be different evaluations inside of, you know, one, you know, grade, if you will, or one evaluation. But inside that evaluation are kind of like mini evaluations, the stuff that I've been involved with. And it's my understanding that S2 kind of works that way.
Okay. Here's another thing that's been thrown out there. Derek hit you with one that I had on my list, and that is when you have a surrounding cast of stars, how tough does that make it to evaluate? Here's another one that caught my attention. I think I can't remember the exact number of quarterbacks since 2000, but there are, I don't know, several hundred, and only nine are under 6 feet tall. And so that doesn't play in well to Bryce Young. Doesn't mean he can't do it, but the numbers will show that it's hard for a number of reasons to stay healthy. You know, it's not just about, hey, you can't see over the line and that kind of thing. But what does that, what do you, where do you put that on your spectrum?
Yeah, I think that's really important. Look, I think when we do this evaluation of guys at every level, what we're looking for is outlying characteristics. So if you are under 6 feet tall, maybe if you're under 6'1", like we have, you know, proof over the last 20 years that there are not a whole lot of guys that are like that, that are successful playing the quarterback position. And so to me, I'm putting that down as an outlying characteristic, right? Use, you know, so you think about certain measurables, like those fit in there. Then you think about, think all the things that you can evaluate. Okay, injury history. Has a guy torn his ACL before? Okay, well, what does that mean at his position? Does a guy, you know, we beat up hand size for a little while. Okay, like where does that fit in the evaluation? And so I think what, you know, 40 time, whatever it is, you start to build this. Now you have, you know, these cognitive tests. So you go through all of that. Like, where does that fit in? The tape is always going to be the most important thing to me. But then I'm going to start to accumulate outlying characteristics, and they're going to mean something to me. Look, I saw some of the stuff going around about Will Levis and his, like, yoked up as he is. It's like, all right, name me one successful quarterback that looked like he could go to a bodybuilding competition. Like, I'm be totally honest with you, like, I'm not sure I know any.
That reminds me, there's a lot of things that come up that are kind of random. Remember that you and I were having this conversation a couple years ago about Josh Rosen and his interest in tennis or something like that. And then there was Andy Dalton. How many redheaded quarterbacks have there been? Yep. I mean, everything. Oh, everything gets combed through. It's amazing.
Yeah, and see, listen, it don't matter, right? You talk about tennis. I think at the time I told you, hey, Drew Brees was a good tennis player. I think he beat Andy Roddick at one point in, like, high school or something. Like, so, look, I mean, yes, there are different things. Or how about this? Like, was the guy a baseball player? Was he throwing a lighter ball? How old is he? You know, like we had that conversation about Kenny Pickett. We're having that conversation about Hendon Hooker. And so I think you need to evaluate all that stuff. And it's interesting, you know, somebody at work sent me, you know, hit rate for, you know, positions in the first round. Okay. So like over the last, I think it was the last 10 drafts. And here's what's interesting. So first round hit rate at every position. Well, and the success was determined by, did that player sign a second contract with the team that drafted him? And the center position had a hit rate in the first round of 88%. Mm-hmm. Okay? Tight end was the worst at 25%. So, okay, well, like, how do you start to, like, how do you evaluate that then? You know, running back, 29%. Do those things start to, make you shy away from a certain position where it's like, look, we're evaluating this position incorrectly. Like, we're getting it right a quarter of the time.
That's really thought provoking there. Is that coming out of the analytics department, or is that just trends?
This is coming out of ESPN's research department. Yeah. Paul Hembo-Kiedis, sent it, to me and others.
Yeah, Hembo likes to stump people on the trivia, too. I noticed that. He's pretty good.
He does. But what's interesting is, like, you just look at it. Look, there have been 8 centers drafted in the first round over the last 10 years. 7 of them have gotten a second contract with their team. Hmm. 8 tight ends have been drafted over that same stretch in the first round. Only 2 of them have gotten a second contract with their new team.
Go ahead.
That makes me feel like, look, between running back, linebacker, and tight end, we're talking about 29%, 26%, 25%. I'm taking a step back and I'm saying not only we are as a team, but we as a league are probably evaluating these positions incorrectly.
Something that's new that I read an article about was the NIL. A lot of quarterbacks who maybe in the past would have gotten their grade and said, okay, Derek, you're a QB. We have you graded somewhere between the 4th and the 7th round. So somebody is likely to pick you here. But you have a pretty good NIL deal. You're looking at some money. The quarterbacks are making money. You're staying in college for another year. And so they're saying, Tim, and you're probably seeing it, that there's once you get past that 4th round, a lot of these guys are staying to play another year of college rather than throwing their name in the hat.
Hey, Sam Hartman, Wake Forest, has an unbelievable career. He's about 6 feet tall, maybe 6'1". He's worked really hard to change his body. I think he came into school probably around 185 pounds and he's probably bulked up to a little bit over 200 pounds. He has been, there's been some good quarterbacks in the ACC recently. He's been as good as any of them. I know Sam Howell, Trevor Lawrence, like in terms of production in that conference. And Wake Forest thought he was leaving to go to the pros. The coaches thought he was leaving, going to enter the NFL draft, and thought that he was going to get a chance to go play like John Wofford is as the backup. For the Rams. And instead he ends up at Notre Dame because Sam Hartman was probably going to be 5th rounder later if he was fortunate enough to get drafted. And I have no idea what his NIL money is, but he's going to be the starting quarterback at Notre Dame on a team that's going to be a pretty good team, and he's going to be as good as any quarterback that they've had in recent memory. So I would guess that his NIL money, at least in 2023, 2023 to 2024, will pay him more money than he would make in the National Football League.
Then he's going to probably play a little bit more. Just a little
bit.
As long as he stays healthy, right? He should win that job.
Tyler Buckner's already entered the transfer portal.
In the portal, And he may end up at Alabama. And if he ends up playing there, he'll be fine and maybe in no rush to come out.
Man, the craziness of it all. Tim, appreciate you as always. Enjoy draft night. We'll chat with you next week.
All right,
thanks, Tim. We'll react to that coming up next and your thoughts as well. 615-737-1025. Caroline Ville DeMays, 1025-1063 The Game. Tune in to Nashville's best NFL draft coverage on 102.5 and 106.3 The Game for the first 3 rounds on Thursday, April 27th and Friday, April 28th. That is this Thursday and Friday. Coverage presented by Parman Tracker and Equipment, the new Cumberland.com, Smoky Mountaintops, Parman Energy, B&B Flooring, and the Nashville Sheriff. I know, Willie. Counting down the days, counting down the seconds until Thursday night.
Oh, yeah.
Just had Tim Hasselbeck on. We have some thoughts in the text line. Unless we have some thoughts.
Let's go to the text line.
Let's go to the phones. Our phone lines are driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. One texter texts in and says, are you surprised that Corey Davis wasn't part of the Rodgers deal?
No.
I would be surprised if the Packers had traded like several offensive weapons to the Jets and they just needed bodies. I don't think they were in that situation though.
Where are we on the checklist? Remember that story came out right after Aaron Rodgers went live and said, I've agreed, I plan on playing for the Jets, whatever it is he said. And then there was that story that came out. Here are the guys that Aaron Rodgers has said, I'd like you to go get.
Alan Lazard, I believe, is the only one. Because it was
Randall Cobb was in there.
Alan Lazard, OBJ.
OBJ.
And who else? Was it a tight end?
It was the slot receiver that he had been with for the longest out of Kentucky.
Randall Cobb. Randall Cobb, so we mentioned him.
There was another one, a tight end maybe?
Oh, he was in Green Bay too with them. What's the big tight end's name? He was okay. He wasn't great. He was okay, but he was always sort of like
Jimmy
Rodgers, sort of security blanket in a sense.
I don't remember
his name, but it was those three receivers and then another. It was a tight end, I believe.
I think it was Mercedes Lewis.
Maybe you're right. Mm-hmm. Maybe it was Mercedes Lewis.
If it wasn't him, it was somebody like him who's been around for a while. But
anyways, the one on the list was Alan Lazard. So he is in New York.
Particularly for the wide receiver position, the question comes up, how many guys do you need? They already have a stable of young guys, Corey Davis being
Garrett Wilson being the reigning offensive rookie of the year. So you feel good about him. And now Alan Lazard. So your young guy who's up and coming, Alan Lazard, who's one of Aaron Rodgers' favorite targets.
Elijah Moore asked to be traded.
They got rid of Elijah Moore, didn't they?
Remember, he asked to be traded, but they didn't right away. You think he's gone now?
I think he's gone. Yeah, he's gone. He's not on that depth chart. He's gone.
Oh, he's in Cleveland.
Yeah, they traded him to Cleveland. So here's their receiving core, which they I'm not surprised that Corey Davis wasn't a part of this package because you got Mecole Hardman, who's coming off an injury. Alan Lazard, who's going to be, it's going to be 1-2 with Garrett and Lazard. You're going to have to, Denzel Mims, you got him, but you're going to have to, you need a Corey Davis in the sense of you need that veteran guy that could be your third wideout.
Your plug and play kind of guy.
Yeah, your plug and play. Now, I wouldn't be surprised if they made a draft day trade with Corey Davis, but I'm not surprised that he wasn't a part of this package because other than Mecole Hardman and Alan Lazard, you didn't really get much because Mecole Hardman, it's not like Mecole Hardman is a third receiver and he's injured all the time. Has a hell of a speed, a lot of speed. You get him in open field, but he has been nothing more than a fast guy, a third receiver that you can't count on because he's been injured. That's him.
Yeah.
So you almost, in a sense, unless you draft a receiver, in later rounds, you're not stuck with Corey Davis, but you'd rather have him on a roster until you sort of figure things out.
Yeah, and how much money is Corey Davis making?
I don't think
that it can be an exorbitant amount of money.
Well, it's got to be still the deal that he –
yeah, he's
that he got
the same,
when he left the Titans. So that's, he got a pretty sizable deal. I don't know what it looks like this year, how much has already been paid and what's his cap and all of that stuff.
What do you make of this move? Because I'm very intrigued by the Green Bay Packers this year. I looked at that as a team this past year with really solid young talent that really was even just a competent starting quarterback away from being much more competitive than they were. But I also think that I'm a little bit scarred by the Russell Wilson to Denver move. And I understand that was a completely different situation. Mm-hmm. A head coach, a first-time head coach, who probably had no business of being a head coach in Denver. Denver had no weapons for Russell Wilson to throw to. So I understand totally different circumstances in Denver than it is in New York. But I think that after the Rams traded for Matthew Stafford, it was just kind of this idea around the league of that's how we win a Super Bowl. We'll go after a proven veteran. And then I think Denver showed us, hey, no, that's not really all that it takes. How good is Aaron Rodgers anymore? And is that now, has he now made the Jets so much better that they're competitive with the Bengals and the Bills and the Chiefs of the AFC?
Well, the answer is to be determined, but what's going to be great is from the minute that deal was done, the two words have been thrown out there, and in New York, it's going to be fun to watch. Super Bowl. That's what they're talking about.
Why not?
How could
Super
you not
be? Bowl. Jets You know, the Jets haven't been to the Super Bowl since 1969, whatever year that was, with Joe Namath. So the hype machine is going to be unbelievable. So whether it's true or not, I don't know. But that's what everybody is saying, that the rest of the pieces are there. Aaron Rodgers will still have enough in the tank with what's around him and a really, really good defense to where he doesn't have to carry the team. That's going to be the thing, I think, is, you know, can Aaron Rodgers just sort of slot into the role he needs to play if he doesn't have to go win the game every week? You got the feeling the last couple of years in Green Bay, he was just elevating. There's been plenty of years in Green Bay he's done this. He's been good enough to do it. He's elevated everything about that team. Now he may not have to do that if the defense is as good as it looks like it could be, right? We never know. In the NFL, the one thing you know is you never know. Like, you might sit there and go, this team looks really good. This team looks really good. And then they're 4-11 in 15 weeks later because people get hurt. Stuff happens. It's not what you think it's going to be. But it really does look like, yes, they look good.
Well, yeah, this team looked good. They are a young team, very good team on defense. Offense, they have potential. They have playmakers on the offensive side of the ball. They just needed a quarterback. They didn't have a quarterback last year. And I look at everybody's numbers with the Jets and think, man, if they had a halfway decent quarterback, their numbers would have been a lot better. I'm talking about Garrett Wilson, Corey Davis, whoever else they had on that squad last year, at receiver. But because of they didn't, they were playing sort of this quarterback carousel, and nobody really stood out. So not only did the position suffer, but everyone else around the position suffered. So they're banking on Aaron Rodgers coming in here and infusing a sense of confidence. They're almost looking at Tampa and saying, Tampa is what we can have here. Because the only difference with Tampa, other than Gronk, they brought Gronk in, is Tom Brady. I know they had some other pieces.
Good defense.
Tom brought confidence to not just that offense, but that team. Mm-hmm. Like, as soon as he walked in the door, they felt, we can win a championship. We can win a Super Bowl. Not we can win. No, we can win a Super Bowl, and we expect to. And they did. I'm sure everyone in that Jets organization, those players, whether it's Corey Davis, whether it's Sauce Gardner, the running back, Garrett Wilson, whoever, the minute that deal, it was, hey, listen, Rodgers is coming now. Rodgers coming. Mm-hmm. You know how much confidence that gave them? Like, this man walked, like,
they all changed their Twitter photos to, like, a picture of Aaron Rodgers in Columbus.
It's like, we are a good young team, but with Aaron Rodgers, we're Super Bowl bound. That's what they think in their mind, and that's what one guy can do. And they should feel that way.
I also wonder how much they really hated Zach Wilson in the locker room.
Oh, man, I hope they didn't hate. I mean, listen, playing, I'm sure, and no one handled it better than Eli Manning. Mm-hmm. Playing in New York. Under that scrutiny. And even when you're doing well, they want to pick at something. But Eli handled it well with the Giants. They had a complete team around him. Man, being a quarterback with the Jets, knowing their history, I'm not surprised that the young man is basically where he's at. I mean, because if you don't start out doing well, Sanchez started out doing well. That team went to two AFC championship games. The minute they started to decline, what happened?
They jumped
butt
all
fumbles,
over him.
This, they jumped all over him.
And New York is not for the faint of heart.
Exactly.
615-737-1025 is our phone number. Every single day this week, D-Mace is breaking down a different position group of a position of need for the Tennessee Titans. Today, it's a special day. Mm-hmm. It's receiver day. And we'll get into that coming up next. Caroline, Willie, D-Mace, 1025-1063, the game.
Look, they're talking about the one.
I got to stop that
Caroline, Willie, D-Mace, do not miss Nashville's best NFL draft coverage on 102.5 and 106.3 The Game. You can join Jaron Stillman, D-Mace, and Chris Sanders as they broadcast live from Twin Peaks and Cool Springs, home of the 29-degree beer, this Thursday for day one, round one of draft night. Speaking of draft night, leading up to the day of the draft, D-Mace has broken down the film of some of his favorite prospects at certain position groups of need for the Tennessee Titans. Yesterday, we broke down corners. Today, it's your day, D-Mace.
We got the scrolls.
Absolutely. It's receiver day.
His special pages in the scrolls that he's got for the wide receivers. Yep.
Yes. Yeah, so I've went through several different players in this sort of evaluation of potential guys that the Titans can pick. And all five guys, I believe, will, you know, could fit in what the Titans are doing, some more than others. But I think all five of these guys will have an impact on their team, positive impact on their team, whoever they go to. But
Number one,
we're going to head up north, straight up north, to the Buckeye State. Ohio State, Jackson Smith and Jigba.
The Ohio State.
I hate saying that.
I hate that.
Yeah. Listen.
But he's not the only Smith and Jigba, because there's a guy for the Pirates that plays for Pittsburgh.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
I was at the Cardinals game. My dad and I was in St. Louis a couple weekends ago. I'm at the Cardinals-Pirates game. And, like, at this point, I'm deep into draft stuff. We're deep into drama and rumors. And I look up to the screen, and it's – I don't remember his first name, but something Smith and Jigba. And I'm like, am I dreaming? I've been getting into way too much draft coverage that I'm now
seeing things. I think
Willie, are they related? I didn't even look.
Willie would have walked out of the building. Too much draft.
Yeah, too much draft. I thought this was baseball.
Exactly. So, Jackson Smith and Jigba. I have notes on all these guys. Great ball skills. Excellent route runner. He high points the ball, and I've said these things many times about Jackson Smith and Jigba. Smooth route runner. Quick and sudden. He separates. He had a big 2021 season where he had over 95 catches for 1,500 yards and I think 9 touchdowns. But you got to remember, some of those yards, I think 300 or 400 of it came in a bowl game when a lot of Garrett Wilson, Olave didn't play, and he became the number one guy. He showed up, and he showed up big in that bowl game with over 300 yards and I think 3 touchdowns. So he had a huge sophomore junior year, but his senior year or his junior year, is he a senior or junior? I believe
he's a junior. So it would have been his freshman and sophomore year. Really,
so his junior year wasn't as good, and it wasn't because of his play. It was because he didn't play. He played one game, I believe, and then shut it down because of the hamstring issues. That, too, I think is a con for him, because what have we said about Mike Vrabel? He doesn't like hurt guys, especially those with hamstrings. So, but other than that, he's one of those guys that you rarely find in a draft, combination of quickness. Doesn't have top-end speed, but he has good speed. Side-to-side movement is excellent. High points the ball, catches the ball really well. He's fluent in his routes. It's like he's running with ease, like he's not trying, but he's more of a slot guy. Out of the 414 snaps he took his sophomore year, 367 of those were in the slot. So the Titans need an outside guy, not necessarily an inside guy. They love Phillips, Kyle Phillips. So he would be more of an inside guy, not an outside guy. So
not much of a burner either.
He's not a burner, but he finds, he's crafty. He gets open. He has yards after the catch. Another thing is the point at which he catches the ball is not as deep as you would like to see it. I think Titans need a guy that when he catches the ball, he's average 8-9 yards down the field. Jaxon Smith-Njigba, a lot of times, it's basically a yard catching and then going, mm-hmm. which he does an excellent job at that. So, but he's more of a slot guy. He's not your outside guy, but he's probably the best slot guy in this year's draft.
Does he complement Treylon Burks well in your mind?
He would. But again, it's what do you think of Kyle Phillips? You know, if you think Kyle Phillips is that guy, then why would you draft Jaxon Smith-Njigba? Because he hasn't spent a lot of time on the outside.
Knowing what we know about Mike Vrabel, what they chose to do in free agency, you know, the call out of David Long Jr., mm-hmm. Christian Fulton, do we think it's realistic that the Titans would have him high enough on their boards that it would be within reach? And Jaxon Smith-Njigba isn't falling to 41.
No, he won't fall. I predict him to be a first rounder. We're in the first round, probably more so late first round, mid to late first round after the Titans pick. I don't think if the Titans stay at 11, they're going to necessarily take a receiver. They may move back, mm-hmm. then get him, but they're not taking a receiver at 11.
I would probably agree.
Yeah.
Number two.
And these guys are in no order. I'm just giving it to you as I wrote it down on the paper. So it's not like, oh, Jaxon Smith-Njigba is not number one guy, and then other guys kind of fall in place. The guy that I love, is Jordan Addison. This guy, I mean, he reminds me so much of, it's like a combination of Jimmy Smith, in a sense, because how smooth he is, Keenan McCardle, because how smooth they were as receivers. But it's almost as if he has this burst, like the kid that went to SC, the running back.
Reggie Bush?
Yeah, Reggie Bush. Mm-hmm. He has that burst like Reggie Bush. Like, he can stop on a dime and then get back going very quickly. He's a 4.4 guy, so he has the speed to get deep. 5.11, so he's big enough to play inside or outside. He was the Biletnikoff winner 2 years ago at Pitt. Y'all got to remember, he transferred from Pitt to go to SC. Mm-hmm. Now, he didn't have a season that he did the prior year. I think he had 1,500 yards when he was at Pitt. He only ended up with 800 and some yards. He, too, dealt with some injuries. I think it was an ankle injury. I could be wrong on that, but it was a lower body injury. But this is another guy that you can put him inside. You can put him outside. He's a three-level route runner, which means he can run shallow crosses, he can run the intermediate routes, and he can go deep. There's been plenty of times, you watch the film, this guy's getting deep. Man-to-man coverage, he's beating zone coverage for post and go routes. And he has an uncanny ability to stay on his feet, even when the defender is there getting ready to tackle him. I've seen him a few times where he's wrapped up in the midst of catching the ball, and he manages to stay on his feet and get extra yards, if not a touchdown. Not many receivers can do that because you're concentrating on catching a football. Well, he's catching a football and staying up as guys are draped on him. So this is a guy. He gets great separation. Again, he's a three-level guy, and I already told you what that is. 23 of his 59 catches came on screens. That may be a little bit of a concern, mm-hmm. But he's shown in the past that not only can I run screen plays, which is prevalent now in the NFL, screen plays. A lot of teams use it at least 10 times a game. I've seen it, you know, at times more than 10 times by either that particular team or the team they're playing, like both together. So whereas it could be bad, but it also could be good because the NFL now is doing a lot of this screen stuff just to get the ball into the receiver's hands and go. But to me, the only probably knock on him is the injury history. And you really want to know why the production went down from his Biletnikoff year to last year. It could be him learning the offense and the injury. So that would be
splitting more snaps.
Exactly. That would be a small concern for me, but not a big concern. But this kid, I love him. He's everything you would want in a wide receiver.
And I think, too, comparing the two injuries between Jaxon Smith-Njigba and Jordan Addison, an ankle injury doesn't scare me as badly as a hamstring that left him out for basically the entirety of the 2022 season. But let's get into more of your wide receiver breakdowns. And Adeemays has three more wide receivers that could be potentially within the range for the Titans to draft in the first round. We'll get into those coming up next. Caroline, Willie, Adeemays, and tune in for Nashville Sounds Baseball tonight at 6:35 p.m. on 94.9 The Fan. The Sounds take on the Omaha Storm Chasers, AAA affiliate of the Kansas City Royals. Sounds Baseball on 94.9 The Fan, presented by 312 Pizza, Farm Bureau Health Plans, and Family Leisure. 1025-1063 The Game.
Hey guys, it's Ryan. I want to tell you about my new pastime, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has been around for over a decade, delivering the most fun you can have online. Play social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.